Welcome to Disc 2 of Confronting the Taskmasters of Your Life. Those who would like, we will share information on how you can obtain material produced for Charlotte Place Ministries following the message.
I keep pondering the question I heard somebody say about a month ago, and what would life be like if I had no fear? No fear of receiving love, no fear of giving love. That all of mankind struggles with basically three fears. The fear of trusting, the fear of abandonment, and the fear of submission to God's love and purposes in our life. And what would life be like if there was truly none of those three fears? And as I ponder that in my own life, I realize how much fear still influences the way I relate to my wife and children and others. And it's become the passion of my life now, 1 John 4:18, that God's perfect love casts out all fear. Because I think you can take all other unhealthy fears and bring them right in line with those three. And this is what this weekend is all about. It's about our journey individually, as a family, corporately as a church, the crossing, and corporately for the body of Christ across the nations of the earth. Because turn with me to 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 11, and I want you to see this little passage that is so significant for everything we're going to be saying. I was asked one time, what is your most favorite book in all of the Bible? And as I thought about it, my first and immediate response was the book of Exodus. And the guy looked at me, what? The book of Exodus? I've never heard of anybody say the book of Exodus was their favorite. Why? It's because of these few verses, starting at verse 6 in 1 Corinthians 10. Now, these things happened as examples for us that we should not crave evil things as they also crave. Now, what it's speaking about is the people of God that were enslaved in Egypt, and they're coming out. That before there can be an entering in to the word that God has given you, before there can be an entering in to the freedom where perfect love casts out the fear of trusting, the fear of abandonment, the fear of total submission to God's love and purposes in your life, before there can be an entering in, there must first be a going out. Because the people of God were enslaved in Egypt to what we'll see in Genesis 1, or in Exodus 1, taskmasters, and in Hebrew, they're lords of service. Lords of service that oppress the people of God with rigor, crushing them of hope and any belief that they can come into the fullness of their destiny. And the people of God could not enter into the purposes of God for their life until there's first a going out. A going out precedes any enter in. And here we see in Paul saying in 1 Corinthians 10 that what occurred in the going out is an example for us. But look at verse 11. These things happened to them. What happened almost 4,000 years ago that happened to them. They were an example to us, written for our instruction. Who? Those that lived 2,000 years ago that Paul was writing about? No. Upon whom the ends of the age has come. Now, how many feel like we're in the end of the age and it is drawing near? Then the most important book in the Bible is the book of Exodus. Because what happened in Exodus is happening today. The same thing that we see in Exodus, we will see in our lives individually and in the life of the church. And when you begin to read the Bible, and especially the Old Testament, you need to understand three things when you're looking at the Old Testament. One, the basic interpretation, exactly what is it saying for that day, that period. Number two, what is the practical application? How does this apply to me, and how do I apply it personally to my life? And then thirdly, the prophetic understanding. All Scripture has a meaning for the day it was written, as well as for a future time and place. And the going out of the people of God enslaved to Pharaoh, to Egypt. Egypt represents the world system that looks to captivate us in a materialistic society that lives all about what can I get from this. It's a system that is totally me-conscious. It's the system of the caterpillar we learned last night, that especially in the United States, life in the United States is a consumer society. And the caterpillar we learned last night consumes 86,000 times its weight. That's the world system, a consumer mentality. What can life do for me? What can success do for me? What can money do for me? What can my spouse do for me? What can my church do for me? A consumer mentality that leads us into enslavement, where we're crushed with the rigor of the taskmasters, the lords of service. But not only is it a world system, it can be a religious system. A religious system with a list of rules of do's and don'ts that motivate us with the fear of failure, motivate us with shame and guilt consciousness, and not the love of God. That's what this is all about. And we need to see, yes, it is an end times book. What was written there? What was written in Exodus? And we'll be in Exodus 1 today and jumping around, confirming with other verses. What was written in this coming out of the people of God is the same thing that will happen in the end times. The people of God are enslaved today. They were God's chosen people 4,000 years ago, and we're God's chosen people today. But the divine purposes of our life has not come to reality. As we asked how many had a word last night, almost every hand went up. As we asked how many have seen the word fulfilled, not hardly a hand went up. Because of the taskmasters assigned to our lives. Because of the Pharaoh, this world, the demonic powers that is meant to bind us and to hold us and to enslave us in a world system and a religious system that holds us back from fulfilling the purposes of God for our life and reaching our destiny and being what God has created us to be. And there will not be a revival. We cannot enter into what God has called us to in the last days until there's first a going out. And don't wait for a going out of the church, because before there's a going out of the church, there must first be a going out of me. Revival. A coming out of the Egypt, of the religious systems of shame and judgment and fear. There's a going out first here. And the going out is not necessarily an external thing. The going out is an internal thing. And very few survive the process. We'll see today, we'll see tomorrow, that even on the midst of deliverance, the people of God said, out in the wilderness, we'd rather go back to Egypt with the leeks and garlics. Because before there's an entering in, the word that God gives you will test you. And I wrote down this morning, this whole weekend is about brokenness without understanding brings hopelessness. Now, how many here have not experienced brokenness? Brokenness without understanding brings hopelessness. And this weekend will restore hope and faith in the word and vision that God has given you, as you receive a personal revelation of the process of brokenness, and as God begins to release in you an understanding that preparation of our character is necessary. There's a going out of some issues in our own life that have held us back from the fullness of God. There's a going out of the flesh before there's an entering into what God has for our life. And we're going to walk through over these next 2 days together. The first 9 chapters, we're only covering part 1 this week. And now let's look and pick up where we left off and see just a little bit more about Joseph. Because if you'd hold your place in Genesis and Exodus 1, or actually the end of Genesis chapter 50, and you'd look at one verse in Hebrews 11:22, and we know Hebrews is to be the hall, it's the hall of faith where the greatest men in the Bible are listed about the faith that they had and what their achievements and accomplishments were. Why were these men so great? And with each verse, he talks about men of faith, and then he gives a little credit. God gives a little credit of why these people's names will reside in the hall of faith for all eternity. And what's he credit Joseph with in Hebrews 11:22? Does he credit him with his ability to stewardship that which is another man's? Does he credit him with his ability to stay pure in Potiphar's house when Potiphar's wife was coming on to him? Does he credit him with his integrity, with passing the test of delay? Does he credit him with passing the test of the brethren? No. What's the hall of faith say to him? I love this part. He says, he gave commandment concerning his bones. What is with you, God? What about all the character that Joseph displayed those 24 years of delay? And you only give him credit about his bones? Now, what commandment did he give back at the end of Genesis 50? And Joseph in verse 24 says to his brothers, I'm about to die, but God will surely take care of you and bring you up from this land to the promise of the land which he promised an oath to Abraham, to Isaac, and Jacob. Then Joseph made the sons of Israel swear this. Right at his death, he's saying, swear this. God will surely take care of you, and you shall carry my bones out from here. He'd given birth to 2 sons before his death. One we know, of course, in verse 23 is Ephraim. The other we know as Manasseh. And Ephraim, the very name of Ephraim has such great meaning within the whole context. Ephraim meant fruitfulness. That even in the land of my enslavement, fruitfulness has come from my life. And then he gave them the name Manasseh, forgetfulness. I've forgotten the sins of my brethren against me. He became forgetful. Forgiveness. He became fruitful. And then his last days, do not let my bones rest in Egypt. What was that? What was the cry from this? What did God credit him with? It refers to, I will not have my identity in the world system. I will not have written for all eternity that Egypt penetrated my bones and I've identified with Egypt, or identified with the palace, or identified with the wealth. Oh, he didn't reject the wealth. He embraced the wealth. Why? To use it to be the preserver of the world. Nothing wrong with wealth, but what's the purpose? And the purpose either identifies you for all eternity with Egypt, or the purpose of the wealth identifies you for all eternity as preserver of the world. As in the famine, the nations of the earth came to Egypt for food. he wouldn't preserve just his family. He said, all that God has given me is about the nations of the earth. The nations of the earth. The nations of the earth. And when he says, don't let my bones rest in Egypt, it revealed his reason for being. God gave him authority, control, and he didn't let it penetrate and become who he was. He used authority and control for the purposes of God and nations. He gave him wealth used for the purposes of God. And here we begin to see what he was wanting to identify with, and we see it in Genesis 12. We see it so clearly, and you may want to look at it with me because it's so much our purpose and our identity. It's part of our going out. There cannot be an entering in to the word God says has called you without an identifying with the covenant purposes of God for your life. And Joseph said, I'd rather identify with the covenant than identify with the success of the world. My identity is not in my success as ruler of Egypt. My identity is in who I am in God, in the covenant. And that was first laid down for his forefathers in Abraham in Genesis 12, 1, 2, and 3. Now the Lord said, go from your country and from your relatives and from your father's house to the land which I will show you. Leave what you've had your identity in. Psalm 49:5, 10, forget your people in your father's house, for the king has been captivated by your beauty. Bow down to him alone. It's saying, don't have your identity in the pain of the past. Don't have your identity in the successes, in the failures of this world system or family structure you may have grown up in. Your identity is in the covenant of God, in the character of God. And when we make that choice, he begins to make us a great nation, and I will bless you, and I will make your name great, and so you shall be a blessing, and I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you I will curse, and all the families of the earth shall be blessed. Every family of the earth blessed through a slave, rejected of all men. This 97-pound, awkward, clumsy, size 14 feet by the time I was about 13 years old. If I turned sideways, I disappeared. The butt of all the jokes in my family, the butt of the jokes among my friends, the butt of the jokes at school, flunked out of college, failed speech class. Teachers told me I would be a total failure. You will never make anything of yourself. My father told me over and over again, you'll never make anything of yourself. And think of Joseph in the pit, sold out by everyone and everything, stripped naked and dragged naked to Egypt. There is a destiny in your life. There is a destiny if you'll say, I will not identify with what has happened in my father's house as a child. I will not identify with what the kids in middle school and high school did to me. Rejected of all men, thrown away by every one or two girls that took a chance on me. Nothing but pain, abandonment, sexual abuse at 12 years old that went on every week for 4 years. Is that where your identity lies? Is that where you say, or where you stand and say, my bones will not rest there? Because God has given me another covenant. And he's given me an opportunity that if I'll leave that land, he will bless me and all the nations of the earth will be blessed. Who would have known that at 38 years old, my dad would come to me and say, Jack, after a lifetime of not believing in God because he was thrown away by the church when his father abandoned him and ran off with another woman when he was 7 years old, and the church rejected his family and stopped believing in God, and comes to me 14 years ago and says, Jack, I believe there must be a God. What made you form that conclusion, Dad? I've watched your life. Now, he thought he was praising me, but he said, there's no humanly way possible such a failure as you could become what you've become. And I realize there must be a God. And maybe your whole family all your life has thought you're the one that is a total failure and will never do anything. And your whole life has been labeled loser like mine was labeled. But if you'll rise up this weekend, I will not let my bones rest there. That's what Hebrews 11:22 is all about. He wasn't accredited for all eternity for his stewardship in Potiphar's house, in the jail, in the palace. He was accredited, I'll not let my identity be in what people have done to me. I'll not let my identity be in the shame and the hurts. I'll not let my identity be in the welts. And it's my cry now as we've gone from a little tiny ministry and my whole life, nothing but rejection and feeling God will bless others, not me. God will do for others, not me. God is His favorites, but I'm never one. And now suddenly the favor of God has come upon us and people from the nations and the phones and the emails every day, 10 and 20, coming from everywhere and invitations. And now everybody likes you. And now my cry is, don't let my identity be there. Because one of the tests is the test of the palace, the praise of man. The place to where all the people in the past that you knew, in their sphere of relationships, for me in the sphere of ministers' meetings, when you'd come into a ministers' meeting and they'd be 30 or some, 200 or 300 there, I was the man that nobody cared to talk to. I was the man at the back of the room nobody wants to spend time with. But now when Jack walks in the door, everybody wants a piece of you. God, don't let success leave my bones in Egypt. I want to identify with the covenant purpose of God for my life. And in Genesis 13, verse 14, and the Lord said to Abraham and Lot, and separated now, lift up your eyes and look from the place where you are, northward and southward and eastward and westward. For all the lands which you see, I will give it to you and your descendants. That is what Hebrews 11:22 is all about. Don't even let my bones rest in the material world, religious system of Egypt. I don't want the remainder of my life identified with what man thinks or does not think. I want all eternity, my bones, to be carried to covenant, to the place of covenant. And coming out, your entering in begins with the coming out of a cry. Don't let my identity be in that thing. Maybe it was sexual abuse. I've been there. Maybe it was the rejections of the friends. Maybe it was success in the marketplace. Is that who you are? Then that's who our children become. Because it's generational. If we think that we don't have responsibility after death, if we think that amassing wealth and just living for it in this present time is what life is all about, we don't understand the principle of God. What our life has been focused upon will carry over into the next generation to come. This is what that cry was all about. Don't let my bones, generations to come, know that my identity was in Egypt. Psalm 90, verse 9. We spend our years as a tale that it's told. Our life for years to come will continue to have effect in the next generation. And understand, Joseph had every reason to reject the covenant people of God. And if you've been in church long enough, you have every reason to reject them too. Oh, to live in heaven with the saints above, that will be such glory. Oh, but oh, to live with the saints below. Well, that's another story. And see, Joseph was hurt, wounded, rejected, battered, bruised, used, sold out by the brethren for their selfish desires and self-willed desires, enslaved, imprisoned. But he names his son Manasseh, forgetfulness. Ephraim, fruitfulness. The word that tested Joseph most was not his vision or dream. The dream was the kernel. What tested him most was the brethren. Those that walked with him in sweet fellowship in the house of God. And for 2 years as I walked with God, all I could see growing for 2 years in a church to where was in the midst of revival and such unity and such freedom. And God had brought the believers of about 30 of us and in 2 years grew to about 200. And I hadn't been raised in a church life. I thought this was what Christianity was about and us all just living in such unity together. And then I go to seminary. And I learned the truth. That much of the body of Christ still lives in Egypt. And there's a journey. There's a testing. There's a word within the word. And the word that tried Joseph was the word of covenant. Will you be faithful to the covenant purposes of God for your life? Is covenant more important than the wealth of the world? Is covenant more important than being right and justifying and proving others wrong and replaying and reviewing all the words that you've received, all the hurt, all the pain? Is covenant more important than our petty will and circumstances and delays? No, I'm sorry to say it only took me 17 years to figure that out. I don't know when Joseph figured it out, but I know when he went to be with the Lord. Don't let my bones rest in that. I don't want my tale told as I identified with Egypt. It's all part of our coming out to enter in. And see, covenant with God is what kept Joseph single and focused in eye in the midst of the pain. And see, when we first come to the church, when we first accept the Lord, when we first come in and become a body of believers, we've got that caterpillar mentality, that consumer mentality. I need to be loved. I need to be healed. I need to be saved. I need to be understood. I need to be accepted. I need. Meltdown is on the way. Because it's all part of the attitude of Egypt. That hinders us from going in to what God has. But as meltdown comes, if we're beginning to embrace that, it begins to produce maturity, growth, vision. As we get our eyes upon the covenant purposes of God, you were created in His image. You are His pleasure. You were created for a purpose and a destiny to receive His love. And suddenly the message begins to change that begins to go through our processes. Why are we here? Not why am I here? What is our collective purpose here at the Crossing? Not what can the Crossing do for me? But why's God joining us together? I've been sitting back at Shiloh Place Ministries wondering, what is going on? Because He keeps bringing in some of the greatest men and women of people I know and adding them to our team. People applying and calling, sending in resumes. Pastors of 38 years, doctorate degree trained. I get in the eyes of these people, and I don't have all those degrees. I don't have all those. What are you doing bringing around us all these people? It's about a we thing. It's about an our thing. He's giving us favor in the nations of the earth. He's giving the crossing favor in the community, and He's bringing you in. Not so I need. There's a season that's okay. Because in John 1, it says He's given us the right to be called children of God. Children are all about I want, I need this. He's giving us a right to be children of God, but the day comes. That's what this is all about, in love, Father's love, transforming our world. The day comes when He says in 1 Corinthians 11:13, okay, the grace has covered you. It's okay to be all about I. What do I get from this? What can Crossing do for me? What can this church do for me? I need them. I need love. I need ministry. I need acceptance. And then God says, it's time to put away childish things. It's time to grow up and go from an I to a we. We, the Crossing, has a corporate word and vision. He's giving you favor. He's brought people in from all aspects of the social structure, from the wealthy to the impoverished, bringing you together for one destiny and purpose, that this region begin to experience the salvation of Jesus Christ, begin to come into a destiny. And even as I was sharing with Andy coming over here, to me this is one of the most significant spots right here throughout the entire nation, because our freedom began right here. And with a great purpose and great calling comes a great testing, and this is the fire that's been separating in your hearts. The fire that maybe has been sensing like a separation of relationships. He's bringing you into a destiny of we have an opportunity to impact the nations of the earth. Think for a moment. Think of the slave Joseph and what he did. If a slave could impact and become the preserver of the world, what could the Crossing do? If a broken, thrown away, total loser that could never do anything with his life, heard it 1,000 times from my father, could touch the nations of the earth, what could the Crossing do? If 10 of you, 100 of you, 1,000 of you, don't let my bones identify with Egypt. Take my bones out of what I was, and I won't identify with the covenant. He's called me. He's called each church represented here to impact your city. But there must be a going out before there's an entering in. And during the going out is going to be a time of great testing and fire, when the enemy is going to do everything he can to thwart the plan of it being, we have a corporate destiny. Our family has a corporate destiny. You have an individual destiny that will operate within a corporate reality. It's not what do I get out of this, but it's how can we establish the kingdom of God in our city, in our nation, in the world. The opportunity you have here at the Crossing to touch the nations. Not just a little bit of support for a few missionaries, but a life so changed, so transformed, that it becomes a light for the nation. The battle for freedom began here. And you do not think historically and generationally the battle in the spiritual realm for the United States is focused right here once more. And God's going to raise up generals out of this place. He's raising up right now generals that are saying, don't let my bones, some of you, Future generals know nothing but poverty like I, nothing but woundedness and abuse like I, but he's raising you up to be a general because you're saying, I will not identify with the betrayals and rejection and abuse. Others wealthy, and God's given you the ability and the relationships to have great financial resource. And to rise up and say, those finances, it's for the preserver of the world. It's for the nations. It's not just for me. Yes, first being a good steward for your family. But there's something beyond that. There's something so much beyond that. Oh, I get on a soapbox. Are we kidding? Where you're at? We all have the same trials, the same needs, the same humanness. But not all are living with the same purpose. Is our cry going to be for the covenant? And Exodus means the going out in Hebrew. It's the going out. There must be a going out before there can enter into the purposes of God for our life. And Joseph had the wealth, but he used it for the purposes of God. He had the power, but he used it for the purposes of God. He had the fame, but he used it for the purposes of God. He had control of people's lives, but he didn't control with authoritarianism and intimidation and fear. He led them for the purposes of God in his life. The things of the world and of Egypt meant nothing to him, but a means to establish God's covenant purposes. The fame, the finances, what God's bringing to Shiloh Place, don't let us identify with Egypt. It's for the covenant purposes of God. And I challenge our team. We have an opportunity. I've been saying this for 3 years before it ever became a reality. There is a revival coming to the nations of the earth. That's what this is all about. Father's love transforming your world. There is a revival that is coming. There is a agape revelation that is going to bring a paradigm shift in the world. Religion as we know it, it's going to be as transforming to the world as Luther's 95 thesis. It's coming. And we're going to be at the forefront of it. God's going to use us so we can get attention. No. So the world can hear of his love and his grace and his freedom, and the wounded and the broken and the rich and the wealthy and the poor can all begin to realize our identity's not in that stuff. Our identity's in the covenant purposes of God. And see, the victory of Joseph was to be in the world but not of the world. That was his victory. A new hope in Washington Crossing, right in the midst of the world. The financial systems of New York and Wall Street, right in the middle of it right here. And to be in the world, but not of it. Don't let our identity rest in our million-dollar homes. But it'll be used for the covenant purposes of God. It'll be used for the world to experience. Never defiled or controlled by the world. This is what Pharaoh wants to ensnare you to. Your identity in Egypt. The world system. But there must be a going out. And the journey will begin with several principles. One, we've already begun to mention the principle of covenant. Will you identify with the principle of covenant in your life? Your destiny. The nations will be blessed, if you will. You see, salvation and the covenant purposes of God are not the same thing. Salvation is an act of grace by faith that makes you part of the family of God, but covenant purposes is to be a ruling priesthood under God. That's his cry. 1 Peter 2:5-9, he's calling us out of darkness, out of Egypt, into a new place. A place of priests and kings within our life. And Satan cannot cause you to backslide. Once you accept Jesus Christ, he cannot cause you to backslide. He cannot send you to hell. It's not even open for business yet. He doesn't have the keys to hell. Jesus does. He cannot control hell. He's not even a manager of it. He's a victim of it. He can't change God's mind about you. There's only one thing He can do once you're born again and accept Jesus Christ. Stop you short of the covenant purposes of God for your life. That's His plan right there. Steal the purpose that you will be a blessing to the nations. Steal the purpose from a corporate church that you'll be a blessing to the nation. Just come to church and become a bless me club. Go through your duty, pay your tithes, and you're here. But come with an I reason, a consumer reason, and not with a nation's reason, a covenant reason, a purport reason. And the enemy will do everything possible to stop you from entering in. Satan's plan is to crush hope, vision, and usefulness in our life, and to get us to rest in our salvation and not entering into the covenant purposes of God in our life. Get you satisfied in Egypt. Give me the leeks and garlics, but I don't want the journey. I don't want the battle. And then there's the principle of continuation. Number two, the principle of continuation. Continuing in the vision in spite of the pain. Continuing in the purpose of God in spite of the discomfort. In spite of the circumstances going against what God has said for you. God told Abraham before Isaac was born. Turn over to Genesis 15. God told Abraham before Isaac was born that part of the release of the covenant would be Egypt. Remember, prophetically, through Paul, 1 Corinthians 10, what occurred in the people of God in Egypt is examples of what it's going to be like in the end times. When we accept God and salvation in our life, have you noticed you don't receive all the blessings and inheritance of God at that time? First, there's a preparation for the purposes of God in your life. And we see very clearly in verse 13 through 15 in Genesis, "And God said to Abram, 'Know for certain that your descendants will be strangers in a land that is not theirs, where they'll be enslaved and oppressed for 400 years.'" Now, we know that there was first 300 years of blessing. That is, Joseph told Pharaoh, "My children, my brothers, my mother and father were here," that Pharaoh embraced them. Now, part of the reason why the rulers of Egypt in Joseph's day were shepherd kings. They were outsiders. They were not even Egyptians. Egypt had been raided years earlier by a group of shepherd kings, Hyksos rulers. And they came in and took control of the land. And now when Israel brought his clan in underneath Joseph, he saw they were shepherds, and Pharaoh, a shepherd, saw the shepherd clan come in, and they were welcomed, and they were given the best of the land. And for 300 years, Israel prospered in Egypt. 300 years of blessing came into their lives at that time. But then 100 years of slavery came, because after 300 years, there was a change in the political system of that day. And we see God told them, "You will move into Egypt," where they had 300 years of blessing, but were oppressed. "But I will also judge the nation whom they will serve, and afterward they will come out with many possessions." You may have been in bondage, but when there's a coming out, there's an entering in with great, great blessings. "And as for you, you shall go to your fathers in peace, and you shall be buried at a good old age." 300 years of prosperity, 300 years of fruitfulness, 300 years of increase. But if you noticed in John 15, 2, when the vine produces fruit, there's always a season of pruning in order that greater fruitfulness can come forth. And see, we produced the season of fruit. Israel went through 300 years of prosperity, but now pruning season's coming. because during prosperity, they became satisfied in Goshen. During prosperity, they're not going to fulfill the covenant purposes of God for their life. Who, when everything in all the dream land of Goshen, the richest, most fertile land throughout all of Egypt, is in your hands, and you become known as the pride of Egypt and everything, who's going to say, well, let's just leave it all, get on our camels, and go for a trek through the wilderness? Crisis has to come to your life to get you moving. And when crisis comes to your life, whatever your identity is in the flesh begins to be assaulted, and you find out what your identity is really in. The independence and self-sufficiency begins to rise to the surface. And 300 years of blessing was not going to fulfill the covenant of God. They were going to go out into prosperity, but first there was going to be a season of slavery. God is always true to His word, even in the midst of the slavery and bondage. And back to Genesis 1, verse 6, and Joseph died, and all his brothers and all that generation. But the sons of Israel were fruitful and increased greatly and multiplied and became exceedingly mighty, so that the land was filled with them. Number three principle of preparation for coming out: the principle of conflict. A new king, verse 8, arose over Egypt, who did not know Joseph. The new king, Ramesses. And on the tombstone of modern day tombstone of Ramesses is the blood of thousands of slaves built the treasure cities of Egypt under Ramesses. Ramesses the Great. An Egyptian overthrew the shepherd kings. And a new line of Egyptian kings came. A line of Egyptian kings of Ramesses that had hatred towards anything of the past 300 plus year reign of shepherd kings. And they hated everything Joseph and Israel stood for. And they became frightened, we see. And he said to his people, behold, the people of the sons of Israel are more and mightier than we. Come, let us deal wisely or craftily with them, lest they multiply, and in the event of war, they also join themselves to those who hate us and fight against us and depart from the land. So they appointed taskmasters, in Hebrew, lords of service. And the job description of the lords of service was to afflict them with hard labor, to build for them Pharaoh, storage cities, Python. These were, and Ramesses, these were treasure cities where the treasures of Israel, of Egypt, I mean, were stored up. What did we say? In 1 Corinthians 10, verse 11, that what occurred in Egypt was written for our instruction and admonition. It was an example for us that live in the end of the age. And we live in the great Egypt once more, 4,000 years later, or thousands of years later. We live in a whole system throughout most of the world that is all about building treasure cities for others. And we have set over us taskmasters, lords of service, that drive us with hard rigor and harsh taskmasters to increase more, more, more. And the entire world system now is built upon a system of get all you can all you can get. Now, there's nothing wrong with wealth, but what is its purpose? Money in itself is not evil. But what is its purpose? And most of us have been enslaved to the pharaohs, that it's all about using us, enslaving us to the world money system to amass wealth and treasure cities for others. And we become so enslaved to those treasure cities, we become so enslaved to a world debt system that's been based upon spending more that's coming in. If God said to you right now, I want you to go spend a month building churches in the Amazon of Brazil, could you go? If He said to you right now, give $5,000 towards the mission work and the mission effort of what's going on at the crossing right now, would you be giving somebody else's money? Because so overloaded in debt, or has God been placing the abundance of the earth in your hands for the right moment when He speaks to you, this nation needs it. This nation needs it. This nation needs it. You see, there's a world system that has enslaved us today, even within the church, that's crushed us with hard rigor. So they appointed taskmasters over them to afflict them. But the more they afflicted them, the more they multiplied, and the more they spread out, so that they were in dread of the sons of Israel. And the Egyptians compelled the sons of Israel to labor rigorously. How do we think God's going to get you out of this world system? It's not the 300 years of blessing. And for my entire life, for 30 years, the only source of peace and comfort I knew was the sea. As a small child with great rejection and hurt in a home family, and then by the time I got to middle school and not being athletic, and the only people that anybody wanted to hang around with was the athletes, even the people I grew up with for 5 or 6 years in school, suddenly no one wanted to hang around with me because I couldn't talk right. I was so withdrawn, such an introvert, so filled with fear that nobody wanted to spend time with me but, oh, the sea. The sea and the water and fishing was a place of rest. It was a place of peace. It was a place of running away from the pain. It was a place fishing the Main Street Pier in Daytona Beach that I live 4 blocks from, fishing it every day, that the old retired people would see me catch the big fish, and I'd work hard as I could to catch more than them. And they'd just laugh at me and pat me on the back and praise me and tell me how good a fisherman I was. And then I went home where I was called the loser, and you can't do any right, and nobody cares about you. You fail at everything you do. You never finish anything you start. And the sea became the place. There I can at least receive some sense of affirmation and value. And it became my life and my identity by my 20s. The top commercial fishing boat captain in the snapper grouper fishing field, and life flowing and God moving. And then the word of the Lord comes to me in December in 1980. Financial blessing coming into my life. For someone in their 20s making $50,000 a year in the 1970s, I mean, I was in the midst of Egypt, the blessing. I was in the palace, the praise of men, right in the midst of the palace. And I get born again. I experience the grace of God. Salvation comes, deliverance from pornography, deliverance from drug addiction, deliverance from alcohol addiction, deliverance from perversion. And God sets the moral issues of my life free. And I've got the wealth of Egypt in my hands and the attention of man. And then He comes with the word, as we spoke about in December 1980. And He says, you're going to leave the sea and you're going to take healing and restoration from the nations. Oh, I dreaded the day that word ever came to me. When it came, Oh, this is wonderful. I wept and I cried and I received the word, and the presence of God had come over me like being in a womb of love, and I heard the voice of God speak to me of my destiny, of my name, of my vision, and we welcome it and we love it for a few days. Until Psalm 105:19 happens. Until the word that God gives us becomes a refiner's fire. And I start seriously considering, I'm going to leave the only sense place of security that I've ever had in life. I'm going to leave the only place that I've ever received affirmation and pats on the back, the only thing of identity and comfort and peace and security I know. I'm going to leave the place of control. Captain, in charge of my destiny, in charge of the crew, in charge of life, go to sea when I want, come home when I want, my own boss. And now God says, Genesis 12:1, leave it all behind. And I just said, sure, God. No. I said, sure, God, one day. And then a year passed. My second child's born. My wife goes into suicidal postnatal depression. Spends 1 year in such bleakness, darkness, I don't know if she's going to be alive. My oldest son's having seizures once or twice a week, rushed in and out of the hospital. Starts battling lung disease. Was God an author of that? No. But the enemy will do everything possible to stop you from fulfilling the purposes of God in your life. He will look to destroy you. He will go after your children. We'll see in the next session together. But God will take the crisis to deplete you of sufficiency in self. God will take crisis to deplete you of your identity and your independence and your gifts and your strengths and your talents. He'll take crisis to deplete you of what makes you feel good about yourself. That's rooted in the flesh and not in the spirit. And the very thing that became the joy of my life, you cannot believe the passion. You can't believe what it's like icing up a 44-foot boat, getting all the food and getting it ready and the crew ready and all the hooks and the lines and the rods and everything ready. And you're getting, I mean, it is a buzz like you wouldn't believe, isn't it, guys? I mean, when you're getting ready to go on a fishing trip for a few days, and I did it every week, and I've got the boat already, and I'm in command, and I'm in charge, and my whole mind is a roadmap of secret hidden wrecks and rock piles with thousands of pounds of fish, and catching on hook and line groupers 200 and 300 pounds, and every week, man, when you pull that boat out of that slip, I mean, you guys know what I mean, don't you? I pleaded with guys. Guys pleaded with me to take them. I mean, they'd pay me to take them. Yeah, I don't want greenhorns on the boat with me. And then God says, leave it all. There's got to be a coming out before there's an entering in. And a coming out involves the principle of conflict and crisis. Conflict with everything in you that's been your strength, your identity. Please understand, who gave me the gift of the sea? God. But the very gift and talent that He gives you becomes the very thing that can hold you back from entering into the purposes of God for your life. He gave it to that little boy for a season. That was all he had to where that sustained me. But at 30 years old, he says, It's time to leave it all behind. And so God will move the governmental systems of this world. He will shake the entire political system of all of Egypt to get the people of God out of Egypt. He will turn your world upside down, and He's not the author of death. It's very clear in John 10:10. It's the thief that comes to steal, kill, and destroy. But God will take what was meant as evil against you, Genesis 50:20, and He'll turn it around for good. The thief steals, kills, destroys, but He comes to bring abundant life. Not just life. I thought the sea was life, and I went through a year of hell until I began to hate the sea. And then I started moving into rheumatoid arthritis of the spine, and I couldn't even stand at sea. And I got to the point I hated the moment I would take that vessel out. The very thing that had been my life and passion for 30 years, I became to despise. And some of you for 20 years, perhaps 30 years, God has used you so effectively. I bet this happened to David. So effectively in the business realm. And there is great joy and great provision. And God used the gifts of your personality type and the gifts and talents of the way He wired and programmed you in business. And you became successful. And for years there was joy and satisfaction. And slowly there became to be a disdain towards that thing. And some of you are going through it right now. And Israel, in the years of plenty, had to have a Ramesses in their life. And from some of you, it's the new boss. There was favor with the old, and now the new boss, oh, he's the gift of God to your life. Have you received the Judas in your life? He's just helping you find out what you're full of and just nailing you there. The hand of God to help us find out what we're truly have our identity in. And He's calling us out in this season in the end times. What took place in Egypt was written for our example and our admonition for those of us that live at the end of the age. And He had to make David so unsatisfied with what had been his life and identity that he's willing to say, I want the rest of my years to be spent for the divine purposes of God. No longer just what do I get out of this? I'm tired of an I gospel and I want a we gospel. I want the rest of my years to count for the eternal purposes of God and the lives of others. I've got a man applying for the executive directorship job in our life, willing to give up $180,000 a year to come for a third. Why would somebody do that? I'll not let my bones rest in Egypt. I've had that system. God provided for us for that system, but I'll not have my identity there any longer. I want the gifts and talents and the experience of these years in business. I want them now for the kingdom. And I see something on Shiloh Place that if I can come alongside of that, I see if I can come, I can touch the nations. Money's no longer the issue. This is what was happening when Ramesses the Great began to afflict the people of God with harsh bondage. Rigor means to crush, to take away hope from within side. And the world credit system, material system, religious system so often brings such deep rigor, hyper-religious activity, 70 hours, 80 hours a week, forsaking family to have success in business. It's a harsh bondage that makes life so difficult with the taskmasters, with the rigor that it crushes us. It takes away hope from within. To labor rigorously, no energy left for covenant purposes of God within our life. And in the principle of conflict, we see four things underneath this. 3A, you'd put if you're taking notes. In the principle of conflict, the covenant people of God are made visible to the enemy. And we see in verse 7 that the enemy now targets the people of God. When you have received a word of liberty and freedom and purpose in your life, the birds of the air seek to come and steal that seed before it can be rooted. Satan seeks to steal that seed, and he often comes through taskmasters. What taskmasters are in your life? Enslaving you with rigor, crushing you, destroying a sense of hope and purpose and destiny. And he'll take us into that place where these lords of tribute and service just steal hope that we'll ever have usefulness in the kingdom of God. Oh, in Proverbs 29:18, without a vision, the people perish. That word perish means they cast off restraint. They have nothing to keep them focused and directed in life. And so the whole world system just comes in and overwhelms them. And we can continue going to church, continue to faithfully fulfill our duty, but just the lords of tribute and service just overwhelming us. Because there's no ultimate purpose. There's no eternal value. And from the time I was raised in such brokenness and abuse and injustice, I always said, God, I know it's an impossibility because I'm going to be a loser my whole life. I know I can never make anything of myself. But I'd like to be able to help somebody. There was always a ray of hope. Let my life count for something that's eternal. Now, yes, I became a caterpillar, a consumer at sea. It was all, what can the sea do for me? Consuming 86,000 times my weight in those years. But God said, that's okay, Jack. One day you're going to get dissatisfied with the present. And as we became willing, in January of 1982, God, I can't go on like this anymore. I can't go on like this, but God, if you want me to leave the sea, if you're saying come out of my Christian Egypt, come away from the sea, Captain Jack Frost, I'm willing, but I'd gotten in trouble with the tax IRS and from before I was a Christian, and many of the fishermen, it's all a cash-based society and you could get away with much. And then the government moved in the early 80s in the fisherman community and began holding us all accountable. And I needed $25,000 to go to Bible school. And God, I don't know if I can do this. I'm willing, okay. I'm tired of the fire. I'll give up the sea. But I threw a little test out there. I owe $25,000. I've got 7 months before the Bible school term starts. I'm going to need all the money I can get to live for 2 years, husband and wife living in Bible school, my wife in Bible school with me. And I said, God, you take care of it, I'll go. I knew I had a way out. And you notice how we bargain with God? We promise Him all these things, but we give Him what we think is an impossible task. And I felt free. I mean, the pressure and fire that the Word had brought on me for a year of leaving the sea, I felt free now. And I went to sea and I got it. And I was off the shore one night off of Ocracoke, North Carolina, out on the continental shelf there in 200 foot of water. And we caught a few hundred pounds of snappers staying up all night. And I headed the boat east out to 600 foot of water where we'd fish in the daytime for grouper. And during that time, the crew went to sleep, and I'm at the wheel, and I go to sleep at the wheel, boat on autopilot, so it's just heading its course out to where we're heading. And I fell asleep, went right past the fishing grounds. And I went out to where nobody ever goes because it's just a desert out there. There's no rocks. There's no structure. There's no fish out in that area. And I'd run about 40 minutes past where you normally fish and then been asleep about 2 hours, and then I just opened my eyes. And you always keep your fish-finding equipment on, and I opened my eyes. And from the bottom to 150 feet up is the biggest school of fish I've ever seen in my life. And I thought something was wrong with the machine, and I turned it off and on. And it just kept going, fish, fish, fish. Something started beating quickly inside of me. And I very calmly called down to my crew, "You guys better get up here and look at this!" And I'm screaming down below, "Get up here!" And they all came running, thought the boat was sinking, and looked at it like, "My goodness!" And it was very clear, right on the bottom, where it's nothing but desert and sand, is a little hump that's sticking up, a shipwreck we knew. We'd found them before, but nothing this size. Within the next 30 hours, we caught 9,000 pounds of fish on hook and line, every fish 50 to 58 pounds. Over the next nine weeks, during the winter time, we caught 75,000 pounds of fish on that one spot. I cleared over $25,000 after all expenses, paid off all IRS, and I think God's got my attention. They call that spot till this day Jack's Bank. Because when I was heading there, I was heading to the bank when I got home. See, God will move whatever political system, whatever He has to do within your employment situation, He will move the powers that be. He'll let you, I never sleep, a captain doesn't sleep over 15 minutes at one shot, even at night laid in his bunk, because you have to constantly wake up to look around and make sure ships don't run you over. And I slept as sound as could be, sitting up in a captain's chair. He had to knock me out and get me to run at exactly the right angle to run over a shipwreck about twice as big as this room that carried the biggest school of fish I had ever seen, the most I'd ever caught off of one wreck that I'd found. Now take the odds of that. What will God do in your life when the cry of your heart becomes, "Do not let my bones rest in Egypt"? What will take place? And Father, we thank You, Lord, that You're drawing us out so that we can enter into something greater than we've ever seen before. And Father, it's not comfortable where we're at. It's a place of great discomfort for many of us. But Father, we're willing. Don't let our bones rest in Egypt.
If you would like to order this product or any other material available at Shiloh Place Ministries, you may reach us at 843-365-8990 or write to us at Shiloh Place Ministries, P.O. Box 5, Conway, South Carolina, 29528. Either way, we'd love to hear from you. For our friends comfortable with the computer, visit our website at www.shilohplace.org, or you may email us at info@shilohplace.org.